Hey, welcome to Friday's program. Boy, what a fast week, huh? Can't believe it's Friday again. Oh, and when we sign off tonight, we finally got the exit music on Friday's fixed. You know, going straight to hell. Just thought I'd let you know, in case that was bugging you the way it was bugging me. Seven past the hour. How about that Facebook stuff? Does that make you want to gag and throw up all over the place? I've never seen a cluster thing like that in my life. Good God. As a matter of fact, I got an email from Mark Zuckerberg yesterday. Apparently, see, I don't own stock. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I do. I have some Sirius. Or no, I have some XM. Same thing now. Yeah, I bought it at $13 and then it went down to about 20 cents. It's back up, you know. That's all we have. Oh, Kathy has some stuff, but, you know, she had that before she married me. But I decided to check out Facebook, so I got my name on the list. And I got an email from Mark Zuckerberg yesterday. This is what it said. Dear potential investor, for years you've wasted your time on Facebook. Now here's your chance to waste your money on it too. Tomorrow is Facebook's IPO, and I know what some of you are thinking. How will Facebook be any different from the dot-com bubble of the early 2000s? Well, for one thing, those bad dot-com stocks were all speculation and hype and weren't based on real business. Facebook, on the other hand, is based on a solid foundation of Angry Birds and imaginary sheep. Second, Facebook is the most successful social network in the world, enabling millions to share information of no interest with people they barely know. Third, every time someone clicks on a Facebook ad, Facebook makes money. And while no one has ever done this on purpose, millions have done it by mistake while drunk. We totally stole this idea from iTunes. Finally, if you invest in Facebook, you'll be far from alone. As a result of using Facebook for the past few years, over 900 million people in the world has suffered mild to moderate brain damage, impairing their ability to make reasoned judgments. These will be your fellow Facebook investors. With your help, if all goes as planned tomorrow, Facebook's IPO will net $100 billion. To put that number in context, it would take J.P. Morgan four or five trades to lose that much money. One last thing. What will I, Mark Zuckerberg, do with the $18 billion I'm expected to earn from Facebook's IPO? Well, I'm considering buying Greece, but that would still leave me with $18 billion. LOL, friend me, Mark. Andy Borowitz forwarded that to me. The Borowitz Report. If you're not on Andy Borowitz's mailing list, you should get on there. I mean, what a bunch of crapola. I'm serious. Talk about reeling in the fish. Oh, my God. Facebook. Ooh, I want to buy me some of that. What are you buying? Yeah, well, no, seriously, what are you buying? If you put your $100 into Facebook, what are you buying? Well, I'm buying part of Facebook. I know. What are you buying? It's a good deal. Why is it a good deal? Well, there's 900 million people on it. Yeah. How much did they pay to be on it? Do you know that Facebook is set up to follow you every time you even take a dump? Do you know Facebook will follow you around for the rest of your lives, your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren? Do you realize that you, once you are even on Facebook, you become part of a vast herd of sheep? With teats that corporate America continues to milk? Are you crazy? Well, no, I just wanted to buy some Facebook. Yeah, why? Oh, Jesus, you and your questions. Facebook. Well, have fun, folks. I'm sure everybody will make a lot of money. I have never seen anything like it, you know, selling air back and forth. Not even air, selling cyberspace, which doesn't exist either. You know, the whole thing sits on what? 10 or 7 or 2,000 supercomputers. It was, I don't know where, in Singapore? On an island somewhere? You know, this is madness. This is madness. All right, coming up at 9:35 It is now 9:12 in the east. In about 20 minutes, we are going to play for you the latest episode of The Return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe. And I'm telling you, you got to listen this time. You got to listen to this one. Not that you haven't listened to all of them, but this one is a good one. Because it kind of sets the stage for upcoming episodes of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. You'll like it. This hour, by the way, is being sponsored by Jeff Love. And his message: I'd like to wish my beautiful wife, Melody, the happiest of birthdays today. She flew into my life 14 years ago and instantly changed it for the better. And for that, I want to thank her from the bottom of my heart. Happy birthday to my sweet Melody of Love. She really completes my tune. Whoa. That's probably the gooeyest, sweetest dedication we've ever had, or sponsorship. There you go, Melody. Happy birthday. Thanks, Jeff. Happy birthday to my sweet Melody of Love. Oh. Yeah, happy birthday, Melody. And thank you, Jeff. We don't have time to do Prairie 2 right this second, but we'll get to it. This weekend in Chicago ought to be a real event. I think Rahm Emanuel is just waiting to unleash the forces of darkness that'll be on the street. The real forces of darkness will be in the NATO meeting. Jesus Christ, what a collection of warmongers, huh? What a collection of people who just want to go kill something, anything. Show it to me so I can bomb it. Show it to me so I can send a missile into its guts. Wow. Wow. I mean, when you start thinking about NATO, how many times has NATO been reformed? NATO was supposed to sit over there in Western Europe waiting for the Anschluss of the Soviet army, remember? They were going to come rolling through the, what is it, the Volga Gap or something? Volga? You know, come swarming, just hordes of Soviet tanks and troops just gushing out of the Soviet Union. And NATO was supposed to be there to meet the onslaught and save civilization as we know it. And, of course, the Soviet Union kind of doesn't exist anymore, you know. It really doesn't. So NATO is meeting in Chicago, I guess, to figure out who they're going to target next. I think it's time they took another look at south of the border. A certain amount of killing is being done in Colombia, Honduras. They're still killing them in Nicaragua, El Salvador, and not so many that'll gather any kind of attention. But, you know, Norte Americanos are not killing anybody that we know of in South America. So, come on, boys, in NATO, when you get together, focus on South America.
Back my case, honey. arms would be. And it happened to me. Dreams at night. It could happen to you. Look outside, or you might stumble. Someone drops a sigh. The thunder and lightning seem to be having their way. But as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day. The turn in the weather will keep us together, so I can honestly say that as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day. And everything's okay. Isn't this a lovely day to be caught in the rain? Going on your way. Now you've got to remain. Just as you were going, leaving me all at sea. The break for me. I can see the sun up high, though we're caught in a storm. I can see where you and I could be cozy and warm. Let the skies are gray, long as I can be with you, it's a lovely day.
guitar roll.
True Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ernie. He has a message for Carmen. To remember the one-year anniversary of your passing and to honor your favorite radio voice, love, Ernie. Thanks, Ernie. That's very sweet, and it's very kind of you to sponsor an hour. Thanks, Ernie. Mother Jones Online points out that North Carolina's vote today on Amendment 1 that amends the state constitution for the first time ever. First time the North Carolina state constitution has ever been amended since it was written. And it's amended to ban gay marriage. Think about that. Gay marriage. It's amended to ban marriage between two adults who happen to be the same sex. Now, as Mojo points out, it's worth noting that gay marriage is already illegal in North Carolina. But North Carolina now becomes the 31st state. What did I say earlier? 31 states now, including California, Ohio, Texas, that have amended their constitutions to prohibit marriage between same-sex couples. Ooh, this is such a critical issue. Oh, my God. Global heating. Fukushima. Disease. Poverty. Hunger. No! Nothing! Gay marriage. But there's a fly in the ointment here. Amendment 1 could also have some troubling implications for not gay couples. Uh-oh! Thanks to the law's vague wording, it is going to strip away many of the legal rights associated with domestic partnerships or legal unions.
What are they?
That's because Amendment 1 says this, quote, marriage between one man and one woman is the only domestic legal union that shall be valid or recognized in this state, end quote. So while it's being called a gay marriage ban, the amendment is much more than that. It's an all-out refusal to recognize any kind of partnership or union that isn't marriage. So, North Carolinians who couldn't get married anyway, gay folk, are screwed. And so are straight, unmarried North Carolina couples. You are too! The ACLU of North Carolina just released a list explaining how bad things could get for unmarried North Carolina couples now that Amendment 1 has passed. Here are some rights that also could be at risk. Listen up. Domestic violence laws protecting people in an unmarried partnership might be weakened. North Carolina's domestic violence laws offer special protections to victims who have an established relationship with their abuser. So, if the amendment narrows the law to legally recognizing only marriages, and if those marriages are only between opposite-sex couples, then it might weaken these protective laws for unmarried partners. Unmarried parents could no longer have the same child custody and visitation rights as married parents. Private agreements between unmarried couples might not longer have a legal basis. This means, for example, that if a couple who has cohabited and raised children together for years decides to separate, the wealthier partner would not be legally obligated to divide property with his or her partner. Too bad! Of course, the children suffer, but that's all right. They're not zygotes. They're not clusters of cells. They're children. So let the little bastards suffer! Right, you right-wing freaks! Of course, right. The law also will interfere with unmarried partners' end-of-life arrangements, such as wills, trusts, medical powers of attorney. Employers would no longer have to provide benefits, such as health insurance, to the partners of unmarried employees. Billy Graham ran a full-page ad in 14 North Carolina newspapers in support of this ban. He said, "The Bible is clear. God's definition of marriage is between a man and a woman. I want to urge my fellow North Carolinians to vote for the marriage amendment." Now, where's a piece of furniture I can eat? I'm so goddamn senile, I don't know. Who am I talking about? Who put this in front of me? What time is it? What? I'm Billy Graham? The hell you say? I'm not Billy Graham! Now, there is this. Take this with as much, many grains of salt as you want to. But according to Mother Jones, voters headed to the polls earlier today amid reports of confusion about Amendment 1 and what it does. A public policy polling survey on May 1st, whose results showed Amendment 1 leading with 55% of voters, asked them if they knew what the law was about. And a surprising number of people were mixed up. As the New York Times reports, quote, just 36% of voters answered correctly that it bans both same-sex marriage and domestic partnerships. An additional 26% thought it banned same-sex marriage alone. Meanwhile, 10% of voters thought a yes vote on the amendment would legalize rather than ban same-sex marriage, and 27% weren't sure what the hell it did. The Asheville Citizen Times, Asheville, North Carolina, along with Chapel Hill, about the only two cities in North Carolina that remain with a rationally a majority of population that is still rational. But the Asheville Citizen Times quoted one man at the polls who stepped out of his voting box today to ask if Amendment 1 was a vote, quote, for gay rights, end quote. The first time the state of North Carolina has ever amended its constitution since it was written, and the amendment or the addition of an amendment to the Constitution is to ban civil rights to a certain segment of the population. Son of a bitch. That's so important, isn't it? Why? Banning same-sex marriage is one of the most important things that North Carolinians had to do today. And the other 30 states, too. By God, we'll show you. This will bring jobs back. This will cut the price of gasoline. This will put some of those predators on Wall Street in prison. Yeah. Ban same-sex marriage. This will bring world peace. This will make Jesus happy. So the state of North Carolina amends its constitution in open defiance of the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Open defiance, as have the other 30 states. We do not believe that all Americans have equal protection under the law. We got the queers today. We're going to get them Negroes tomorrow. And you know who's next? I'm so goddamn sick of them Mexicans. We're going to get them next. And then the Jews and the Muslims. And finally, those damn women, those irritating women. We're not worried about fracking. We're not worried about nuclear power plant construction. We're not worried about any of that. We just don't want gay people to get married here in North Carolina and Texas and California and Ohio and right down the list. Because you know why?
Why?
Because if gay folk get married, it puts not gay marriages at horrible risk. It does how? Just does. How? Just does. How? Says so in the Bible. Okay, that's enough. That's enough. When we come back after the break, J.P. Morgan Chase, one of the most predatory, filthy capitalist organizations in the history of the planet, J.P. Morgan Chase, right up there with lead predators. These are people who will cut your goddamn throat and laugh while you bleed. J.P. Morgan Chase. And for this one, we'll have to ring the bell, open the book, and light a candle. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Here's Mike Malloy. Reminds me of you.
This whole town is haunted. 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Ernie for Carmen. And Ernie writes, to remember the one-year anniversary of your passing and to honor your favorite radio voice. Love, Ernie. Thanks, Ernie. Appreciate it a lot. One last thing on the tangentially speaking on what happened in North Carolina today. Jude sends us in. It's from Sam Harris's book, The End of Faith, page 159, quote, it is no accident that people of faith often want to curtail the private freedom of others. This impulse has less to do with the history of religion and more to do with its logic, because the very idea of privacy is incompatible with the existence of God. If God sees and knows all things and remains so provincial a creature as to be scandalized by certain sexual behaviors or states of the brain, then what people do in the privacy of their own homes, though it may not have the slightest implication for their behavior in public, will still be a matter of public concern for people of faith. A variety of religious notions of wrongdoing can be seen converging here. Concerns over non-procreative sexuality and idolatry especially, and these seem to have given many of us the sense that it is ethical to punish people, often severely, for engaging in private behavior that harms no one. Like most costly examples of irrationality in which human happiness has been blindly subverted for generations, the role of religion here is both explicit and foundational. End quote. Sam Harris, The End of Faith. Thank you, Jude. Explicit and foundational. You will not have privacy! You will not have sex for fun, whether it's with a man or a woman or a man, or both. You will not have any of that. Because God sees and knows everything, so therefore we will legislate you into a corner. These are sick people. I'll tell you, you know, I don't hate them. I'm just so sick of religious fundamentalists. You know, it's astonishing to me that these morons have gotten so much power, and it is disproportionate to their numbers. And I think the reason, like for example, in Indiana today, the defeat of Richard Lugar in the Republican primary. How many people voted? I wonder what the percentage of eligible voters, eligible to vote in the Republican primary, who actually turned out to vote today. I wonder what it would be. 17%? 12%? I wonder what the percentage of voters in North Carolina. Probably the average person didn't even know about Amendment 1, or if did, say, oh, Jesus, more of that. You know, I don't care who gets married. I don't give a damn. I got to go find a job. But the religious crazy people? Oh. Can you imagine the sermons in the Christian churches across North Carolina yesterday? Why, that senile old Billy Graham even took out an ad that went in 14 newspapers. This is not what God wants. And if anybody would know what God wants, Billy Graham would know, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. I got hooked again. I thought I was done with the topic. J.P. Morgan Chase. A collection of murderous, predatory capitalists, if a collection ever existed. Huffington Post has a piece there talking about a woman named Linda Almonte. She worked at J.P. Morgan Chase, and she went to her boss about a potential fraud in a major deal that she was helping to close within the company. And she expected her boss to applaud what she had done. I mean, she puts the reputation of the company above everything else and says, boss, guess what? I found something here. Instead, the boss fired her. Of course. She's 41 years old, and about her family, she said, quote, after I got fired, we went down fast. End quote. She had been making $100,000 a year as a division vice president at Chase, enough to support her stay-at-home husband and their four kids, ages 12 to 22, and to rent a three-bedroom house in San Antonio, Texas. Her move at Chase, going to her boss, amounted to essentially suicide. Almonte told the Huffington Post. No bank in town would hire her after word spread that she had stood up to the banking giant. After more than a year of job hunting, Almonte and her family left town. They now live at a hotel near Disney World, paying $300 a week for a two-bedroom with a kitchenette. Linda Almonte enrolled her children in a federal program for homeless kids so that they wouldn't have to switch schools if the family had to leave the hotel. Her father joined them to help out, and they survived on their father's $2,700 monthly combined Social Security and disability payments. Her fate is not unusual. Dana Gold, a senior fellow at the Government Accountability Project, said, quote, employees get fired all the time for blowing the whistle. We see it so much. It is a predictable phenomenon. More on this when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Mystery Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush Crime Family. It is 7 minutes past the hour. Phone lines are open, 877-996-2556. Back to the story at Huffington Post about the J.P. Morgan Chase whistleblower, Linda Almonte, who lost everything because she tried to tell the truth. She didn't go to the press. She didn't go to a government investigator. She went to her boss inside J.P. Morgan Chase and said, I think there's something wrong here. Okay, what was wrong? Almonte had been working at Chase for just a few months when she was asked to pitch in on a deal to sell 23,000 credit card accounts that belonged to customers behind on their payments. The sale was to a debt collection agency. You know, they buy these accounts for pennies on the dollar, and they keep any of the money they can beat out of the customers. All the accounts had judgments on them, meaning that Chase had already taken these cases to court, sued the customers involved for failing to make payments, and won the lawsuits. Now, before the sale took place, Ms. Almonte was asked to check the amount owed and the court's ruling in each case. Does this sound like how some of these banks handled their foreclosure procedures, right? Yeah. Only Ms. Almonte was honest. After reviewing more than a third of the files, Almonte's team reported back to her that nearly 60% of these accounts contained some sort of major error, including discrepancies about the amount owed or whether the court had indeed ruled for the bank. Concerned about all this, because she's an honest person, Almonte went up the chain of command, flagging the errors and encouraging management to halt the sale of these 23,000 credit card accounts to some predatory, stinking, wouldn't you like to rip their eyes out, collection agency. Instead, the bank fired her and completed the deal anyway. They went ahead with the sale. What do we care? We're J.P. Morgan Chase. Who are you? You're an employee. Goodbye. There's the door. Huffington Post reports here that Chase declined to comment for this story, as did the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, which is currently investigating this filthy crap hole of a bank. Almonte filed a whistleblower claim with the SEC in November 2010. The amount she could potentially be paid if she wins her case is unknown, since it depends on whether the agency considers her information crucial to successfully bringing a case against Chase. Now, to help compensate for the risk that whistleblowers take. You know, how dare you be working for a company that is about to commit massive fraud? How dare you point out to your capitalist predator boss or bosses that their company's about to commit fraud? No, no, no! Shut up! Sit down! Go type! The Dodd-Frank, the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial regulatory law that Republicans are desperately, and Democrats are desperately trying to kill, offers incentives for whistleblowers. However, Dana Gold, the senior fellow at the Government Accountability Project, excuse me, whoa, Ms. Gold said, While other employee advocates applaud the new provisions, neither Almonte nor any of the hundreds of other whistleblowers who have filed complaints under the new program have received anything for their information. Instead, these informants, who have risked their careers, wait to learn whether they will receive any sort of government reward, award, I should say, or nothing. The new Dodd-Frank program also grants whistleblowers more protection against retaliation by an angry employer. But none of this has applied to Linda Almonte. While she, her family, and her father, who had to join them because her father gets $2,700 a month in combined Social Security and disability payments. Her father had to move in with the rest of the family into a two-bedroom with a kitchenette motel at Disney World that was costing them $300 a week. While waiting to hear if the SEC not only pursues a case against Chase, but also wins it, and whether she will receive a payout under the new program, Almonte says she's, quote, starting to get my life back together now, end quote. She now works as a management consultant, earning roughly 80% of her salary at Chase. She has relocated from the hotel to a rental house. Nevertheless, she knows she will never regain her former career trajectory. She said, quote, you Google me and my name is everywhere. Any company that would hire me will see that. I can never live that down. She can never live down the fact that she told the truth. Within the capitalistic pig organization, another one that cares not a goddamn. They're just like Mitt Romney. This is why Mitt Romney is the nominee. The capitalists got behind Mitt Romney. Oh, are you kidding me? Just whatever you need, Mitt, because you're a half-witted jerk. We can manipulate you. You're just like us. And how many of these people do you suppose are Christian or Mormon or whatever, talking about Jesus, talking about truth, talking about justice, talking about salvation, talking about honesty, talking about the Ten Commandments, talking about, oh no, they don't talk about the Sermon on the Mount, Mike. No. And how many of these people have read the verse that says it will be easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter into the gates of heaven? You bastards. Well, there is a great getting up morning day coming, and I ain't talking about no rapture. I have enough faith that the great arc of history does move toward justice, that the time will come when the people who have done the most damage to other people in this country, and globally probably, but other countries are going to have to take care of their own guillotine operation. But the day will come when the American average, middle class, working class, whatever you want to call us anymore, when it finally dawns on all of us that same-sex marriage is not, should not be the little dangly thing that is held in front of the faces of the dumbasses, so they'll run and vote. Oh, I don't want queers to get married, because if they do, well, I'll never get a job. On the other hand, who am I kidding? This is about as good as it gets, Truth Seeker. Are things going to get better? Probably not. We'll be right back.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people's...
Show all substance, no abuse.
21 past the hour. To the phones. Mark is in Chicago listening on XM. Hey, Mark.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's just that I hope I can get my point out before I get jumped on too, because I think you got a great show, but I guess we have to agree to disagree about some things.
What's that?
Well, it deals with homosexuality.
Are you gay?
No, absolutely not. Are you?
No. But okay. I just wonder from what point of view you're going to take. I think you're going to do some gay bashing, right?
Absolutely not. That's not in my nature, but I am going to express my viewpoint on it, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I personally don't have anything against people who are homosexuals, females or males. I am talking on behalf of children and the take that it would have on me. Just imagine your kid. If you have a child, I'm sure you do, and if he's still a kid, who do you look up to? He look up to his dad. He wanted to be like who? His dad. And what I'm simply saying is that people who are gay, I don't believe in my heart that a large percentage of them want to be gay. I don't think anybody want to be bashed or talked about or ridiculed, and no more than the kids.
Well, but that's not up to gay folk, Mark. That's up to heterosexuals to stop bashing them.
Absolutely, but that my point is not with heterosexual or gay people. It involves the children.
Oh, no.
Wait a minute.
Don't tell me to wait a minute, sir. This is my program. You have come into my house. You will follow my rules or I'll hang up on you. So don't tell me to wait a minute. Are you clear on that?
I'm not scared of you, Mike.
All right, goodbye. Adios. No, it's not about being scared. It's about being polite. It's about you're coming into my house. I don't come into your house and start telling you this, that, and the other thing. Listen, you right-wingers have got to get something straight, goddammit, or we're just not going to ever put you on this program. You are coming into my program, my place of work. This is what I do for a living. You will come in here respectfully, or you will not come in. It's very simple. And once I find out that you're here under false pretenses, your ass gets disconnected and you don't ever get back on this program again. I don't care if you're black, white, gay, straight, up, down, Jew, Gentile, Mormon, or demon worshiper. I don't give a goddamn who you are. You will show respect when you come onto this program. And you will not say to me, hold on. No, sir, you won't. You may try, but you won't. It's that simple. Mark is in El Paso, Texas. Yes, Mark.
Hey, Mike. Good evening. Oh, my goodness.
Oh!
I know. I just tell you, Mike, this thing has really tapped me. I can't believe in this day and age that North Carolina would pass something like this. What's next, Nuremberg laws?
I know. It's astonishing. I've lived in North Carolina twice. Back in 1970, when it was a real hellhole of racism, conservative Klan activity, and before that, I lived there in 67, when it was even worse. But since then, I watched North Carolina kind of gravitate toward a more rational or a progressive attitude. And then this today, I don't get it.
It's like it's going back to that. And then these people, they always seem to want to throw the Bible. Like, that's going to be the answer to everything. Well, the Bible says this. The Bible says a lot of other things, too.
Yeah, right, it does. You know, if your children disrespect you, take them outside the house and kill them. You know, the Bible says that, too. I wonder if the freak that just called in here from Chicago, if he's had children, if they disrespect him, if he took them out in the backyard and cut their heads off and let them bleed to death, because that's what God told him to do.
Exactly.
Man.
Exactly. I know. I was born there. That was many, many, many years ago. But it's just sad. It's a sad state of affairs that this what's happening. It's like we're going back in time. I mean, it's the same with these people. Take America back. Back to what?
I know.
To bigotry and no rights for women and... Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm
angry.
Yeah, well, I am, too. You know, I hate to say this because I am white male. But what they're talking about going back to is back to when white male was king, when white male never got challenged on anything. If white male wanted to act like a total asswipe, fine. He can act like a total asswipe. If white male wants to do this, white male can. If white male wants to do that, that's what they want to go back to. But that doesn't exist anymore. That was a false construct to begin with. I think that's one of the reasons that I get so furious is because I am white male. I am Caucasian. I do walk around with pants on. You know what I'm saying? And it's difficult to be in that role when there are so many white males out there who are such insane freaks. It is difficult. Mark, I got to leave it there. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in.
Tonight, I'm waiting for the light. Seems like I'm in the middle. Working for something that I can't touch and sometimes can't even believe in. Oh, oh. Cradled by the hands of fate, the fate that sometimes wraps around too tight. So tight.
Here's Mikey.
25 before the hour. You know, it occurred to me that so many of these right-wing Christians who are so adamant in their hatred of gay people.
Oh, I don't hate them. I just want them to disappear.
So adamant, so wrapped up in their hatred of gay people because, you know, it says so in the Bible. And so many of these Christians use the King James Version of the Bible. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? Throughout his life, James had close relationships with male courtiers, which caused debate among historians about their nature. Some of King James biographers conclude that Esme Stuart, later Duke of Lennox, Robert Carr, later Earl of Somerset, and George Villiers, later Duke of Buckingham, were King James lovers. And restoration of Apethorpe Hall, one of the residences of King James, undertaken in 2004, revealed a previously unknown passage linking the bedchamber of King James and George Villiers. Now this is all at Wikipedia. You don't listen to me. Just look up King James and go down there to where it says favorites. Now, did King James have children? Of course, which is a shocking thing, I guess, to a lot of homophobes. I said it the other night. If some of you freaks didn't realize it, yes, lesbian women actually can give birth. And yes, homosexual men can actually father children. Ooh, and that's what the dumbass from Chicago wanted to call me about.
Well, you know, they look to their fathers
for what?
They look to their mothers.
For what? There's only one thing that children look to their parents for. One thing only. Love. But homophobes don't get that. So anyway, all you folks who want to use your Bibles to beat the hell out of people, just keep in mind that King James, who ordered a translation from the Greek and the, what else? The Greek, the Latin, the Hebrew, the Aramaic, whatever. And matter of fact, William Shakespeare was one of the translators. Please keep in mind that your boy was as queer as could be. But he was also, how many children did he father? My God, I think King James had, what, seven? I don't know how many of them lived past, you know, I mean, a lot of kids back then died, babies died shortly after being born. So the idea that someone is, you know, we've talked about this too, there's a sexual continuum. Way over here, you're exclusively homosexual. Way over here, you're exclusively heterosexual. And most of us fall on that continuum someplace here, over there, up here, down here, over there. Queer as folk. You know what I'm saying? Children, babies, marriages, relationships. You know, I know this is a shock to some of these Christians, but in the first place, it's none of your business who somebody might have sex with. It really isn't, as long as they're consenting adults. What the hell do you care? And your Bible was authorized by a gay man. Well, at least bisexual. Ha, 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 ha. God. Take that to the pulpit on Sunday. God, seriously. You right-wing Christians who listen to this program so you know what to hate. Next time you go to churches, or when you go to church this Sunday, just go, Reverend, you know, I heard something on that half-wit atheist Malloy's program that our Bible was translated, you know, by King James, and that he was gay. Is that true, Reverend? Well, if not, gay. He was, you know, a switch hitter. He played for both teams. I didn't have a knee slapper, Rev. I played for both. You get it. I'm sorry, Reverend. I didn't get it. It just never fails to make me crazy. Danny is in Mill Valley, California, listening online. Hello, Danny.
Hey, Mike. Nice to talk to you.
My pleasure.
So yesterday, yeah, you probably know by now, but it was Einstein that said we can't promote and prevent war.
Yeah, simultaneously, right. You're right. I had a bunch of people email that to me.
Okay, right. But I want to ask you and all progressives and actually conservatives, too, to make a distinction between the neocons and the conservatives, especially if one believes in the 99 to 1%, then a lot of those 99% call themselves conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And conservatives don't want to steal oil for the Saudi royal family if they knew that's what we were doing.
Right.
So a lot of them are con. A lot of conservatives are infected with the neocon virus. That's true. But, you know, most of the Democratic Party is also infected with the neocon virus.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's their old-fashioned divide-and-conquer con, you know, that's getting, you know, the red-blue, you know, puppet show jacked up when mm-hmm. it's neocons that are the problem. I mean, and remember Fox's mission statement, which nobody seems to get, is to mock liberals and con conservatives in order to destroy America.
That's true. That is their mission statement, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, we have a one-party system, as far as I can tell, the neocon party, and they got a Republican wing and a Democratic wing. And, you know, people say, why doesn't Obama have a spine? He's not working for you if you're a progressive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and also with the economy deal, you know, this too much of this, I think, criticizing capitalism. I mean, I don't think capitalism's the fault, because we don't have free market capitalism. We have militaristic monopolism.
Well, okay, but you know, for the sake of verbal shorthand, I still call it predatory capitalism. I'm not it's state capitalism. I don't disagree with you, but I use the term capitalist or capitalism as a catch-all phrase, and it works.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I just think it's more accurate, and it's really the militaristic, you know, monopolies are causing all the problems.
Well, they're causing a lot of the problems. You're absolutely right, but I would not go so far as to say all the problems. I think the military is an extension of capitalism, not the other way around. Capitalism demands increasing markets. I know I have people who regular listeners of this program who will debate that, but capitalism does require globalism, which is capitalism unbound. Globalism, by definition, requires ever expanding markets, and that requires ever diminishing labor costs, and that means try to get back to slavery if you can. So I don't think militarism drives capitalism. I think capitalism drives militarism.
Well, yeah, you remind me of the quote from Bucky Fuller about the CIA.
What was that?
And he said, if that stood for what they actually did, it would stand for capitalism's invisible army.
There you go. But that's I don't know, maybe that's where I got the idea from reading Buckminster Fuller. But capitalism is the engine, militarism is the enforcer.
Yeah, I'm not sure about which drives which on that.
They both suck. Let's put it that way. We can agree on that. They're both bad, and maybe we can agree on it. But I see both of them. I'm not against the idea of mercantilism. I'm not against the idea of privately owned businesses, privately owned factories. I feel that there are four or five industries that should be publicly owned. Including communications, the transportation, energy, I've got four or five. Malloy's democratic socialism lists four or five industries that should be publicly owned. But beyond that, I'm all in favor of family-owned farms, family-owned businesses, entrepreneurial ideas that never come when you have state control. So there's a difference between democratic socialism and state socialism or state capitalism. There's a big difference.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, we just have to denounce this perverted, inverted neocon reality where they say war is peace, genocide is justified, and doomsday is our only alternative.
Well, I agree. I do agree. Danny, thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. Thanks for checking in, pal. Hope you call again. Thanks. We're about ready to take a break. Then we'll come back and take some more phone calls. Where's my list of Malloy socialism, Kathy? It's around here someplace. Malloy's socialism. You know, when I am king of America for a couple of days, there are certain things I will put into place. We'll be right back.
So when the man comes, there will be no doom. Have pity on those whose chances grow ten. There ain't no hiding place from the Father of creation. Say it. One love. What about the one?
One heart.
What about the
let's get together and feel all right.
I'm pleading to mankind.
One love.
One heart.
Give thanks and praise to the Lord, and I will feel.
John Henry, Lord, it won't kill me. Well, it won't kill me. Sure won't kill me.
just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. How does one man assert his power over another, Winston? Winston thought. By making him suffer, he said. Exactly. By making him suffer. Obedience is not enough. Joe is in Indianapolis listening on XM. Hi, Joe.
Hey, here, big guy. How you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Look here. Can I ask a question here?
Sure.
If anyone that disagree with you, would they all be considered right-wing conservatives?
Not all. Because okay. I have a lot of liberals, a lot of Democrats who disagree with me.
Yeah, because I'm not part of any party, but I just happen to agree with that other caller that called you previously.
Agree with him about what?
Well, I think the issue he was trying to make is that children unnecessary. And I know I was one of those kids, so I speak from experience.
Are you gay?
Oh, absolutely not. But my parent was.
And what happened? Did it ruin you?
Well, in a sense, yeah, it did.
How did it ruin you?
Well, and I'm talking about as a kid. I'm not talking about as an adult.
How did it ruin you? How did it ruin you as a kid?
Well, I had to defend my parents' sexual preferences.
Wait a minute. This is the same guy, right?
Yeah, right.
You're the same guy that said he was calling from Chicago, aren't you?
I'm from Indianapolis, bro.
You're Mark, aren't you?
My name is Joe.
Yeah, well, why did you use Mark when you called a minute ago? Oh, you hung up now. That was blue. Yeah, I never would have guessed you were the same person. Wow, you really disguised your voice good there, dude. Look, man, apparently you have some problems, Mark or Joe or Ralph or Pete or whatever your name is, you know. It's clear. It's obvious you got some problems. So rather than call a left-wing talk show host, why don't you go get some help to work out your problems? You know, you're not going to get any sympathy from me. You're not going to get any empathy from me. You're not even going to get any understanding from me. You're not going to get anything from me, Mark Joe, except a figurative kick in your ass. So go get some help. Go get a therapist. Go talk to your priest. I don't know. Whatever you want to do. Scott is in Virginia. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Mike. This is Scott. I'm from Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And really enjoy your show. I was exponentially against the proposition in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I had hoped against hope that you know, we'd see something else. But I'm from the South, as you can tell, with this New York accent. I didn't expect that. But you know, I worked for it. And I'm in Virginia. I'm white. I'm straight. I have a beautiful wife and two children. And I'm a United Methodist minister. And these people who are quoting the Bible, mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. They may know what a Bible says. They do not, exponentially, do not know what it means. And there is very little written about homosexuality in the Bible. Very, very little.
Well, it's my understanding, having spent a lot of time in the Methodist Church, and the Baptist Church, it's my understanding that Jesus never said a thing about it in Leviticus.
Not one solitary word about it.
Right, in the Old Testament, which is a history of a tribal desert people wandering around the Middle East for the most part, there are references to lying with a man as you would with a woman. That could have been attributed to simple procreation of the race, and then again, it also had to do something
with pagan religions in which they had something called temple prostitution, and that's what those verses had to do with. It didn't have anything to do with same-sex relationships. Nothing in terms of what we understand is a gay or straight person. These verses have been taken horribly out of context, just like, you know, slaveholding bishops did many years ago. and or how we have had pushback for women from passages of, and you can prove any, including me, you can prove anything you want from the Bible when you start taking it out of historical context. Shame on these, but you know, it's terrible if people don't know the difference. But shame on these people that know the difference and continue to tell these people. You know, that's something that I get very, very passionate about as well. Mm-hmm. But here's the line. Virginia United Methodist clergy, for the most part, we are 100%, for the most part, there is a strong pull for us to have sexual equity in the church. That's not going to happen anytime soon. Our general conference just met in Tampa. And the legislation that happened there for the Methodist Church was not the way we would have had it. We'll meet again in 2016. But we're going to fight the good fight. Mm-hmm. And we're going to fight the good fight the way our grandfathers and our fathers fought for civil rights, and our mothers and our grandmothers fought for civil rights a generation or two ago.
Well,
I
appreciate that point of view very much, Scott. Thanks a lot for checking in, okay?
God bless you.
All right, sir. Take care. There you go. Let's finish up this hour with Scott's call. All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears. I'm sorry, but I don't know why I'm saying I'm sorry. But on the agenda again next hour is Fukushima. So if you don't want to participate in that discussion, I completely understand. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say Bush crime family. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. And as promised, I wanted to touch on what we talked about last night during the third hour. I kind of focused on an article written by someone at naturalnews.com. Again, I don't know if it's a man or a woman who wrote this. Somebody has emailed me and said they think it's a guy. Okay, and anyway, this is the article where the writer said, I'm interrupting our normal email schedule to bring you an urgent alert that makes everything else seem insignificant by comparison. He went on to say the issues of genetically modified organisms, fluoride, food freedom, vaccines won't matter at all if we don't solve this far bigger issue that threatens human civilization, Fukushima Reactor Number 4. Okay. Now, I quoted at length from, matter of fact, I think I share with you the whole thing that was posted at naturalnews.com. And got some reaction that was in the mailbox this morning. The writer at Natural News is trying to make the point that this potential disaster is an extinction-level event to a certain degree, certainly in the northern hemisphere, if reactor number four, the contents of reactor number four is loosed into the environment, either the earth, the water, the air, what have you. Last week, I told you about a petition that was presented to the United Nations by a consortium of Japanese citizens, business people, intellectuals, diplomats, asking for UN help in making sure that reactor number four, the cooling pool reactor number four, is contained. Because if it is not contained, then this disaster is a certainty. Now, the degree, I feel like I'm a moron right now. The degree of the disaster, I guess, is what is being debated. Will it be a disaster at all? Will it be contained within the nation of and territorial waters of Japan? Will it spread as an atmospheric plume? Will it be a plume in the sea? Will it affect marine life? Will it affect mammals, plants, weather patterns? Will it do nothing? You know, this is maddening. It really is. This is madness. This is a kind of, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? I have no idea, and I don't know that anybody listening to this program has any idea. I really doubt, seriously, if the scientists involved have any idea of the potential scope of a disaster of this sort. I mean, they have their mathematical models, they have their laws of physics, they have weather patterns, they have currents that flow through the Pacific, they have this and that and this and that. But still, I don't think anybody knows. And possibly what is being spread by the web and so many websites, it might be just alarmist nonsense. Just total crap. I don't know. On the other hand, what is being reported via the internet could be subdued. That the potential for disaster here is far greater than the writers, like the guy at Natural News or other places, are talking about. Could be much worse. I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows. And this is a part that is making me a little bit crazy. Let me share with you a couple emails from Prairie 2. It's about numbers. He, that's referring to the writer, he's crazy, except if you're among those who die. The numbers were done in the 50s and 60s. I guess he means the potential for disaster here. Based on both accidental and deliberate exposure to tell how many people would die, how many would recover, and how many would show no effect. Chernobyl wasn't that big a deal if you weren't in the certain percentage who died. Fukushima could be 1,000 times worse and not be noticed if you aren't among those who die. The tonnage simply isn't there to blanket the hemisphere and the concentration the writer's talking about. Japan is a long, narrow island. It depends on the wind to determine how much would need to be of that country to be abandoned. Okay. You know, okay. I don't quite know what how to refer to Bruce's repeated statement here. You're not going to notice unless you're among those who die. I don't quite get what... I'm sorry, Bruce, I don't get what you mean by that. I mean, if you die, you're not going to notice at all. Oh, never mind. Michelle, who listens on KPOJ in Portland, writes... Mike, what I remember from the 50s was an exercise that the school I went to had regarding how fast you could get home in case of an impending attack. You were supposed to get home within 15 minutes, a time frame that was how much warning you got for an attack, a nuclear attack. Well, we lived a good mile from the school, and even though I ran home as fast as I could, I didn't get home until 20 minutes. I was very concerned that I didn't make the time frame. My mom said to just tell them that it took 15 minutes, and I said that would be lying, and she said, it doesn't matter anyway. I don't know whether your concern about the plant in Japan is as serious as it appears to be to you. I do know that the photograph of the plant looks bad. The amount of, hopefully, superficial exterior damage is extreme. I don't know exactly how much radioactive material is in the container. Problem is that I don't trust what the company that owns the plant says or admits to. Would a cloud of material develop and float over to the North American continent? Don't know. I do know that living in Oregon, we would be in a bad state if something like that happened. It may be it may be that any discharge would be rained out, so to speak, by the time it got over the Rockies, and eastern North America would be relatively unscathed. I'm still wondering about the stuff that's floating over the Pacific from Japan. Some of it is starting to arrive, but nothing seems to be said about any radioactivity. Anything you can learn about the situation would be welcome. Michelle, listen to you on KPOJ Portland. I don't think there's necessarily any worry about the debris, that huge, the millions of tons of debris from the tidal wave, or the tsunami going inland and then sucking back out to sea. I doubt, seriously, I mean, I don't know, but I doubt there would be any nuclear, any type of radiation danger from that. That was just stuff that was, crushed and destroyed by billions of trillions of tons of water and then sucked back out to sea. So I don't know. Anyway, Michelle in Portland. From William in Hollywood. He says, I don't think you are being an alarmist at all. Certainly we've grown up in a generation that's had the fear put into us with crap like duck and cover. Yet isn't that the point? The last thing the government wants is to make or allow the people to be aware of the real danger. This could disrupt everything that they may have planned, since we are now a global economy. The ones in the know, of course, can escape. We have seen this devastation of a nuclear blast and the effects of depleted uranium that we now pour on the Middle East. Yet this has not stopped us from continuing this madness. So I ask, are we aware as a people or just blocking out the truth? So far, every man-made grinding of the earth and resources has left its effect. We know this. They have run away with building nuclear power plants, yet there have been incidents that have poisoned the planet, and the effects are still here today. To build a nuclear plant on a known earthquake fault displays how far this madness has become. I'm concerned, just like you. It's not a joke to be ignored. Look how many times corporations, and this includes the nuclear power industry, have hidden the truth. We don't know what's in our food or where it comes from. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. I hope this email makes sense. I'm tired and worn out from all the insanity, but most of all from the ignorance that people choose to hold close. William.
Take them back, you know better than that. Does that talk astronauts, TV games, and pains? They don't understand, and how can I explain? I try, but I can't say. Pennies, nickels, dollars, slave play.
Radio Right, from the left, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. There is another website that is linked from National News. It is Akio Matsumura.com. He is, I don't know if he's a scientist. He is a writer. This was originally written in Japanese. As a matter of fact, if you go to that website, AkioMatsumura.com, there is a link you can click on to read this in Japanese, which obviously I cannot do, so I'll read it in English. And this is what Mr. Matsumura wrote a couple of weeks ago. He wrote, Japan's foreign ambassador to Switzerland, Mr. Mitsui Murata, was invited to speak at the public hearing of the Budgetary Committee of the House of Counselors. I guess that's a Japanese governing body. On March 22nd, on the Fukushima nuclear power plant accident, before the committee, Ambassador Murata strongly stated that if the crippled building of Reactor Unit 4 with 1,535 fuel rods in the spent fuel pool above ground collapses, not only will it cause a shutdown of all six reactors, but will also affect the common spent fuel pool containing 6,000 fuel rods located some 50 meters from reactor 4. In both cases, the radioactive rods are not protected by a containment vessel. Dangerously, they are open to the air. This would certainly cause a global catastrophe like we have never before experienced. Mr. Murata stressed that the responsibility of Japan to the rest of the world is immeasurable. Such a catastrophe would affect us all for centuries. Ambassador Murata informed us that the total number of the spent fuel rods at the Fukushima Daiichi site, excluding the rods in the pressure vessel, is 11,421. I asked top spent fuel pools expert, Mr. Robert Alvarez, former senior policy advisor to the Secretary and Deputy Assistant Secretary for National Security and the Environment at the U.S. Department of Energy, for an explanation of the potential impact of 11,000 rods. I received an astounding response from Mr. Alvarez. Quote, in recent times, more information about the spent fuel situation at the Fukushima Daiichi site has become known. It is my understanding that of the 1,500 spent fuel assemblies in reactor number four, 304 assemblies are fresh and unirradiated. This then leaves 1,200 irradiated spent fuel rods in pool number four, which contain roughly 37 million curies of long-lived radioactivity. The number four pool is about 100 feet above ground, is structurally damaged, and is exposed to the open elements. If an earthquake or other event were to cause the pool to drain, this could result in a catastrophic radiological fire involving nearly 10 times the amount of cesium-137 released by the Chernobyl accident. The infrastructure to safely remove this material was destroyed, as it was at the other three reactors. Spent reactor fuel cannot be simply lifted into the air by a crane as if it were routine cargo. In order to prevent severe radiation exposure, fires, and possible explosions, it must be transferred at all times in water and heavily shield structures into dry casks. As this has never been done before, the removal of the spent fuel from the pools at the damaged Fukushima Daiichi reactors will require a major and time-consuming reconstruction effort and will be charting in unknown waters. Despite the enormous destruction caused by the Daiichi site, casks holding a smaller amount of spent fuel appear to be unscathed. Based on U.S. Energy Department data, assuming a total of 11,000 spent fuel assemblies are being stored at the Daiichi site, nearly all in pools, they contain roughly 336 million curies of long-lived radioactivity, roughly 85 times the amount of cesium-137 released at the Chernobyl accident, as estimated by the U.S. National Council on Radiation Protection. It is important for the general public to understand that these reactors have been operating for decades, such as those at the Fukushima Daiichi site, and have generated some of the largest concentrations of radioactivity on the planet. That was a statement from Alvarez. Now back to Akio Matsumura, who said, many of our readers might find it difficult to appreciate the actual meaning of these figures, that we can, yet we can grasp what 85 times more cesium-137 than the Chernobyl accident would mean. It would destroy the world environment and our civilization. This is not rocket science, nor does it connect to the pugilistic debate over nuclear power plants. This is an issue of human survival. Well, damn. You know, what are you going to do when you have something by Akio Matsumura, and you have something by Mitsui Murata, and you have something by Robert Alvarez, and all these people who know things that you and I don't know, and they're all talking about a very, 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 very bad thing that could happen. So, to hell with it. Let's just dance. Oh, oh, yeah, see it.
right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So, oh, you don't want to dance? All right. Well, you know, what are we supposed to do with this information? The petition that was, I think it was back on April 30th. What is that? It's only been about a little over a week. 72 Japanese NGO organizations sent this urgent request to the UN and the Japanese government, requesting or asking or demanding urgent action to stabilize the Fukushima nuclear power plant. And I as far as I know, in certainly in American media, there's no report of that. I don't know about South Asian media or South Pacific media. I don't know, Australia, New Zealand, India, China, Philippines. You know, I have no idea. Do you? But the silence from this country, from the media in this country, to me, is alarming just in itself, isn't it? I mean, that was a news story a year ago, and 10 months ago, and 9, 6 months, 3, 4, but it just disappeared. It was like after the horror, the nightmarish quality, the stupefyingly horrific images of those tidal waves swooping into inland in whatever prefecture that was, those waves, and of course the stuff that wound up on YouTube, that was just, I mean, horrifying to see, wasn't it? Because you could see little tiny people down there in the left-hand part of the frame, still packing a car, and out of their line of vision, coming up in the upper right part of the frame, this massive, incomprehensible wall of water and cars and buildings and bodies and animals just coming right towards those little people down there in the left-hand corner of the frame who were still packing their car. But those images, you know, those were from a year ago. So out of sight, well, you know. But why is there not? Or is there not? I don't know. Does anybody know? If you're listening to this program, do you know? Is there a consortium of U.S., a consortium of global governments or regional governments from the area that are working on this, that are honest to God figuring out how to contain this spent fuel pool that sits 100 feet up in the air? Jesus, I mean, is nothing happening? Is it still just, okay, put more water in it. Oh, well, that evaporated here. Let's put some more in. Now what? Don't know. Is that what's going on? Is this just alarmist bat crap? Is this something that you would read at one of the bat crap websites around the web? I mean, I've gotten emails from people who are suggesting just that. Oh, come on, chill. This is nonsense. This is you sound like I forget his name.
Alex Jones.
I don't know what that means. Is that an insult? I have no idea. I don't know. Do you? And then the question, should we know? Is this something that we should know? We should know, I don't know, everything is a numbers game. What are the odds of this happening? What are the potential for another, or what is the potential for another earthquake in that area of the globe. It's my understanding that's part of the Ring of Fire. It's my understanding that the potential for another devastating earthquake is, oh, I don't know, right up there with whether or not you're going to have a rainstorm next month in wherever you live listening to this program right now. I don't know. Do you? Does anybody? And why don't we know? That's the thing that bothers me. I keep going back to that damn movie from the 50s on the beach, or late 50s, early 60s. I guess it was late 50s. Of course, the irony here is just almost off the chart. Japan, at the hands of the United States, was the first country to suffer the devastation of nuclear bombs dropped over population centers. Devastation that went on, well, I guess it's still going on, isn't it? You know, 60 years later. 65 years later. Wow. The Japanese were the first to suffer. Oh, I know. I don't want to get into even an imaginary discussion with you about the cause. You know, Pearl Harbor does not equal Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It just doesn't. And if you think it does, you're just goddamn insane. I mean, and you shouldn't be listening to this program. As far as the causes of the Pacific War between the United States and Japan, you're going to have to go to people a hell of a lot smarter than I am. And I will, but I will tell you that to get your answers here, but I will tell you this. Whatever was told the American public was probably at least half, maybe 80% lies. And you know it was. Just like Nicaragua, just like Vietnam, just like every war the United States has ever been in. So if you want to debate the causes of World War II and the Japanese-American confrontation, blah, 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 go ahead, go ahead. I mean, talk until your ass falls off. But in the meantime, the irony is monumental that the country that suffered at the hands of the United States nuclear devastation, annihilation, of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Half a million people burned. Let me do that again. If it took that long. And now, the potential for a nuclear or a series of nuclear reactors in Japan to send it all back to us. Oh my goodness! As ye sow, so shall ye reap. Or something like that. Something like that. So, what to do? What to do? What to do?
The sky is falling! The sky is falling!
Is that what this is? Running around, little chicken little?
The sky is falling! Oh, and a piece fell right on my head!
No. That was an acorn.
Really? Is that what this is? You know, when you're in a dark room, darkest room in my grandmother's house when I was a kid growing up was the coal bin. It was down in a stone basement, and I hated it down there. There was a light overhead. My uncle used to go down there and shovel coal into the furnace. But the coal bin itself, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I mean, unless you've been in a coal bin or coal mine, you don't know what darkness really is. But that's what I feel like sometimes about this Fukushima issue. Little kid standing in the pitch black, the incomprehensible darkness of a coal bin. And I know that there's a huge rattlesnake somewhere in the corner. And I can hear it. But I can't see it. Can't see it. This is like a bad dream. You know, and I want out of there. Okay, which way to go? This way to go? That way? Is somebody turning a light? That's how I feel about this whole Fukushima thing. Don't you? I mean, no, of course not. Nah, I don't feel that way. I just push it aside. I just say, look, you know, it's just one more bunch of bat squeeze nonsense that, you know, I have to worry about, right? Nah, global warming and now this and genetically modified organisms in my food and how the hell, you know, and E. coli and little worms and things in my chicken and I shouldn't be eating beef and, right? So, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Well, maybe, Mr. Malloy, you should stop talking about this issue. Just stop. So the other thing we kind of mentioned last night was the meltdown that is occurring in Greece, even as we speak, and the election in France of what's that noise? Oh my goodness! What do we have? Well, that was interesting. A socialist elected president of France, and of course the meltdown that's occurring in Greece, the meltdown that's about to begin occurring in Spain, in Italy, in Portugal. A couple of comments about that from Roz in Canada. She writes, Mike, I'm so glad that Sarkozy is out. Sarko was only comfortable around the elites. What a jerk. His administration was flamboyant and crazy. As for Greece, the party that could get in there is riding on a wave of discontent, much like conditions were in pre-Nazi Germany. And that enabled the rise of the Nazi Party after the financial crash of the 30s. The conditions are the same, and this neo-Nazi party is calling for expulsion of all immigrants, legal and illegal, from the country. This is how Democracy Now! Explains it. Quote, voters in Europe have supported anti-austerity candidates in landmark victories. In France's presidential election, François Hollande was elected as the first socialist to lead France in 17 years. Greek citizens rejected two parties in parliamentary elections that had pledged to enact harsh international bailout measures. Meanwhile, Greece's neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party could enter parliament for the first time. Yanis Varoufakis, professor of economic theory at the University of Athens in Greece, says, quote, just like after 1929, when you start with a Wall Street collapse, which then spreads throughout the breadth and foundations of the Eurozone, spreads throughout the breadth and width of the world capitalist economies. Similarly, after 2008, we have an economic crisis that shook the foundations of the Eurozone. the political class, he continued, just like in the 1930s, has failed spectacularly to mount a response to this economic crisis, and now there is the beginning of a political implosion. End quote. Yannis Varoufakis, professor of economic theory, University of Athens in Greece. Well, his, in two or three sentences, of course, his encapsulation of what happened, with the crash in 29 is right on target, right? When economies collapse, when depression begins, when there is no work, there is no distribution services, it's not like on the day after the stock market crash, all the farms in the United States, all the crops that were growing, all the animals that were being raised, all of a sudden, killed over dead! That's not what happened. And yet, we had people in this country starving to death. What happened? Well, it was collapse of the economic system, collapse of the system of distribution. And there was an attempt, if you remember, there was an attempt to, after Roosevelt was elected, to assassinate him, to turn the country over to a military dictatorship. Had it not been for General Smedley Butler ratting the sons of bitches out, it could have happened. But I digress. So here we are in 2012. And economists like Paul Krugman, and I think Stiglitz, has he been saying the same thing? I'm not sure. But Krugman, for sure, has been saying now for 2 years, this is not the way to go. The austerity, so-called, the cutting everything, the putting more people out of work, more people on welfare, more people in a hunger situation, is madness. It's insanity. And I have to wonder who is making these decisions and why. And I can answer my own question. I can let my mind just float. Oh, I know who's doing it. The neo-Nazis, the 1/10 of 1%. They want chaos. They want a great dying off. And they're going to get one. So they think. So what to do here? What to do here about this refusal on the parts of governments in Europe and government here to understand that in an economic crisis like this, the last thing you do, again, quoting Krugman, what do I know? The last thing you do is to follow these insane policies like this freak Paul Ryan, the head of the budget committee in the United States, the things they're talking about, oh, let's slash everything except the military budget, cut everything. Take food away from kids. Take education funds away from people who want to go on to higher education. Take away support systems for food stamps. Take away support, Medicare, Medicaid. Take it all! Take it all! What is this? What craziness is this? Roz concludes, Mike, this is all very troubling and it seems there's chaos all over the place now. This doesn't bode well for anyone, plus the fact that people have finally awoken to the fact that austerity imposed on countries is nothing more than a hoax, and they're rejecting it. Yeah. And more irony, we have the irony of the Japanese Fukushima situation. We also have the irony of Germany at the end of World War I forced into a situation that utterly and absolutely destroyed their political and economic system and gave rise to Hitler. And now Germany is imposing on all of Europe through the Eurozone what some cynics like me might call revenge. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.